It's the True Faith Podcast. Newcastle United 1, Tottenham Hotspur 2, beaten on the Newton Day, but it wasn't all bad news. So you got myself, Alex Hurst, Simon Campbell, Norman Riley and Mark Cowley to talk to you about yesterday, the wider implications and how we think it went. This is live, or at least being recorded, on the True Faith YouTube channel with the camera lads. So check that out, subscribe, loads of videos coming out over the season for that. And this podcast is sponsored by you people, the listeners, our patrons, who pay for 6 extra podcasts per week for the what we think is the small firm sum of £1.25. So if you're interested in that and hearing more of this kind of stuff, have a look at the link on social media, on Twitter, or it's in the description of this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to on. We're going to jump straight into it though, lads. Go on then, Si, you're immediately to my right. So for you, yesterday, you know, how did you feel walking out of St James's Park at the final whistle?
It was a strange feeling of deja vu from this time last year, where we'd put in a really good performance and come away with no points, albeit we lost Shelby to a red card and Lejeune to the injury. But I thought with 11 men on the pitch, we matched Spurs for the whole game, and arguably we deserved a minimum of 1 point, if not a win. So yeah, it was the same feeling of we've lost the game, but if that's what we're capable of, you kind of have a bit of optimism about the season ahead. And you know, that was a good opportunity to beat Spurs. I'm not going to lie, like they were poor, they looked tired, but at the same time, they're still a quality team, and we've matched them pretty much man for man for 90 minutes. So as far as I'm concerned, it was a encouraging sight to see Raf and the lads back.
Cowley, would you echo that? Is it all positive, or is there anything to be worried about?
Coming back from away from that game compared to last year, I'm more encouraged by our display. I think we're very, very unlucky not to come away with a point, especially on our second half performance. I think in terms of a lot of positive to take out of that, but negative wise is, I guess, the first half in terms of how they scored their goals. Rafa will be really disappointed in the way we've obviously conceded them goals, both from crosses, first one, Dummett not really, or ball watching, not concentrating, and Tongan getting the goal in. Second one to that, Yedlin. People can blame Yedlin, but I think Richie at fault, to be honest. I think Richie should have kept on running with Ali and that. So I think negative wise as well in the first half, I don't know, just because it was the first game of the season, but like Diarmi and Shelby took a little while to get into the game, and we lost possession at the back, and them two as well. They got at the second half. Went on, we got better, but yeah, that's a negative, keep giving the ball away, a bit sloppy, but I think it's probably just because it's the first game back, to be honest.
Champion. Yeah, I suppose we've got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about the general performance, a lot of the things you picked up there. Norman, you've written a very positive match report on the True Faith website, which was kind of full of pride in the performance. Do you just want to talk about that a little bit and how you felt travelling back to London after the game yesterday, because you put a lot of time, miles and money into supporting this team?
Mirroring what the two lads have already said, to be honest with you, but leaving the ground, like, really disappointed, but not disappointed in the sense that we performed pathetically and being utterly, you know, utterly hammered. I was disappointed that we performed so well and didn't get anything. It's more frustration than anything else. The performance, given what's been going on, I would say behind the scenes, but it hasn't been behind the scenes, has it? It's been very public. The whole Ashley debacle, the issue with the players' bonus agreement being signed, the politicking between Rafa and Ashley. I'm saying politicking, I mean, it's just Ashley being, you know, Ashley. So taking all of those things into consideration, and given that there's been the kind of if Rafa goes, we go, Ashley out, protest movement, and the sports direct protest pre-match inside the stadium, the atmosphere was really positive, and it didn't appear to, all of this kind of negativity swirling around the club didn't appear to affect the performance, and that's what I took from that. I took that as a real positive, because what it means is that the players are still 100% focused on the job at hand, and as is Rafa, and I think that was reflected in the performance yesterday, and the mistakes, especially that Mark's mentioned there, I agree with them completely, and I also agree with the fact that it's the first game of the season, so there will be that little bit of sloppiness. I mean, Spurs themselves, you could argue that they're a little bit more tight. They were a little bit more tight than us due to the fact they had more players at the World Cup, but at the same time, you know, that they're professional athletes, and And they were equally, I thought, as sloppy at the back as we were. It's just that we didn't get the rub of the green. So I'm really positive. I'm looking forward to Cardiff. It'll be a completely different game. But I haven't left the stadium thinking we're in big trouble this season. I've left the stadium thinking, actually, I feel more positive about us not struggling this season than I did last.
You touched on the protests yesterday and everything that was going on away from the ground. Si, you were there. You were at Northumberland Street, Mike Ashley's retail shop. I don't want to mention its name. Not that I'm sure anyone who listens to this shops there. But yeah, what was it like? Was there a good turnout? Can you kind of describe for the listeners who didn't manage to get down how the protest went?
Yeah, I mean, I got down there just after 11, courtesy of some delayed Tyne and Wear metros. And when I got there, apparently it had been going for about 20 minutes. You know, the crowd had started to amass about 10:30, and by 2:45, it was in full throw. There was hundreds. I mean, I've seen quotes in some of the reports up to about 2,000 people. That might be a bit of a crazy number, but there's certainly 500 plus people stood outside Sports Direct very peacefully. The banners and stuff were far enough away from the doors of Sports Direct that, you know, no one was being illegally blocked and all this. So it was all a very, very like positive and peaceful protest. All the TV cameras were there, loads of journalists. I think a real statement was made. I'm sure people have seen on Twitter that Colin from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust went into the shop and gave out some chocolate bars to staff to make a point of it's not them, we're here to give a hard day. It's all about Mike Ashley, and I think that was received really well. But yeah, I mean, on the whole, everyone seemed to be united about this situation, which hasn't been the case. You know, we've talked about these kind of pop-up protests over the years, you know, walks, marches, and you get really thin numbers. And considering this was a lunchtime kickoff and asking people to get into town for 11 o'clock in the morning, the numbers were quite staggering. And yeah, I think this is the beginning of something, really. This is the beginning of a real movement to try and get this man out of our club. So yeah, I was really pleased with what I saw.
Really positive to see numbers potentially being exaggerated. If Keith Bishop's listening, there was 100,000 people there.
Yeah.
And you want to see the next one, not that we manage them or organise them, but I think there's ones planned next week for Oxford Street, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Belfast, Manchester, and any other UK city, Keith. So I'd get loads of extra security on, no expense spared. You know, massive protests coming, that kind of thing.
It's good how we just continue to do this rather than where you think it's just going to blow it over and within a month, even if we start playing well, if you're going to blow over, continue to do this. You're not going to obviously be continuously reminded, because he probably thinks, oh, if the results go well, everyone's going to like stop this after a month or so, but continue to. But it's good to see that was a peaceful protest as well, and the fact that no idiots were doing anything stupid, because that's the one thing where you think, right, if it's going to go in the store, do anything, would put us in a bad name, really. But glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there was a bloke went in and bought some footballs and then came out and was like, I totally agree with what he's doing, lads. And he's like, anyway. Yeah, totally. And I think what was also very positive, I mean, all the chanting was quite... It was quite mild, you know, there was a little bit of swearing, but generally speaking, it was about Ashley out, and that was important as well, not looking like a bunch of football fans swearing loads, and generally, like, none of those kind of types that you worry about showing up at that kind of event were there, or they were well-behaved, or whatever it may be. People were doing the right thing for this protest. And then what was even more impressive was that everyone just turned their attention to the match, so by the time we're getting to the stadium at 12:30, there was really good atmosphere inside the ground, and Rafa was received really well, and the players received really well, and everyone just focused on the football. That's what a protest should be. We've made a really good point without it detracting at all from Rafa and the lads and kind of supporting the team. That's exactly what we wanted.
That's it with the atmosphere as well. We didn't, in terms of Ashley out, that was sang at the end, which all sections of the stadium were singing, but it was a case of that wasn't sang right at the start, going from the protest to the start of the game. It was totally all behind the team, all behind Rafa. So that was obviously good to see, and a lot of, like I say, a very positive atmosphere throughout the game yesterday.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that at the same time that you had this protest outside Sports Direct, and you had, you know, you've got social media is very active with a lot of anti-Ashley athlete, anti-Keith Bishop stuff.
I'm certainly very anti-Keith Bishop.
and you've seen the fight back. So the people who, the kind of the naysayers who said these protests won't do anything, nothing will happen, which is a very strange take for me, but that's fine if you want to be like that. And fair enough, not everyone has to get involved. It's entirely up to each own individual how they kind of demonstrate, if they want to demonstrate at all against Mike Ashley and the way he runs Newcastle United. But the whole you shouldn't do this because I think it won't work as a bizarre way to live your life, but you know, each to their own. You've seen a huge kickback already through the media. You've seen fucking Steve fucking Parrish. I think that's his actual name. like on fucking TalkSport today, talking about Newcastle United with a host of Bishop fed lies. You've seen Sam Allardyce in recent weeks doing it, Andy Gray, Richard Keys, all the people that you'd expect to come out in favour of the regime are, and it isn't happening by accident. Now the worst one of all yesterday, lads, is rest in peace the respective Shola Amiobi. You know, Norman, I'll come to you on this one. I know you were at the game, so you wouldn't have seen his pre-match comments. How and why does a local lad who represented the club hundreds of times come out in favour on national television of someone like Mike Ashley?
How does he come out and defend him? Honestly, mate, I've got absolutely no idea. It's inexplicable. It's completely inexplicable. You know, especially when you compare it to Shearer's comments. I mean, Shearer's been nothing but critical, and justifiably so, of the Ashley regime ever since, obviously, he saw it from the inside out, didn't he? He was mistreated by Ashley and Lambias at the time, and he's been nothing but critical since, and rightly so. Is there any link with him in this Bishop agency, or with him being on Mike Ashley payroll, or is he trying to get into the club in any particular way as a coach? I really don't know. There's just no need for it. It's inexplicable and really, really disappointing. Given, like you say, he played over 300 games for the club, and he spent the vast part of his career there, and he's from the area. He's a supposed Newcastle fan. Anyone who calls himself a Newcastle fan and comes out and supports Mike Ashley, given the way he behaves, has got to question that credentials as a fan, because it's just, it's just completely and utterly incorrect defending him.
Yeah, I totally agree. Despite all the bollocks spoken by Shola and other people, but we'll concentrate on Shola for a minute, about debt clearance, about stability, and you know, this is the least stable period in the club's history has been, in terms of, like, we've always had issues in the past and bad eras, but the Mike Ashley era has been going on now for 11 years and doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. The strangest thing for me, Si, that Shola said, and this is just total bollocks, when asked about Rafa's team selection and the fact that he hadn't selected any of the new players, Shola said it was a reward for the players who finished 10th last season. And it's just like, really? Do you really think he's playing Hosslou, who did score and had a good game, ahead of Rondon because it is some sort of reward? Like, you know, it's just absolute. Or is it the fact that the vast majority of the signings aren't automatic first team picks? The fact that Rondon and Mutu have not played in a professional match, be it friendly or otherwise, with their new colleagues? It's just like, it's not one thing, it's much worse what he said about Mike Ashley, but then also just, it's like, this is how far it's gone, and it's gone. Rather than saying, actually, Newcastle United did their business far too late in the window, they did far too little business, and despite the fact that the signings are good signings across the board, they aren't the kind of level of signing that, like, is really going to improve the first team and take the club and the team to another level, which is what a lot of teams have tried to do this summer. So it's just a baffling comment. I mean, poor Dwight Gayle, you know, his reward for finishing 10th was being loaned at West Brom.
I think it was a really strange thing to see Shola in what I think must be his first public kind of TV outing, wasn't it? In his little glasses and that. He was obviously trying really hard. I feel like he might have been put under some pressure to speak in this way. And for a lad who's probably quite desperate to get his media career started, he's kind of, what's the best way to describe it? He's sold his soul, hasn't he? He sold his soul to the devil in exchange to try and get a media career going. And I honestly would never have thought he'd be one of the players to do that, one of the local lads. So it's really disappointing. And yeah, the weird nonsense that he's come out with makes it look even more scripted, like he's been put up to it, as opposed to him kind of coming up with that as his opinion. Does he really think that the players that we've signed aren't starting because last season's players deserved to get the first? Like, I don't think he thinks that. Does he really think that Mike Ashley's saved the club, or has he been given not a script, but, you know, say this, Shola,
pile of money?
Yeah, say this, and we'll see you all right. We'll get you a regular spot on.
Well, me and Ben, like, speaking before the game, saying it's really odd for Shola to be on there. Well, like, how many people have the act before, like, got Shola to come on there? But like you said, he's on the payroll and he's working with the academy, so I don't know if that's why he's come on. But what else he said, it was Newcastle fans will be quietly happy. It's like, quietly, like, I mean, this team, we know we're up, but again, we're not, what he said as well, we're not competing with the likes of Liverpool and Man City. We can't compete with, of course we can't, like, we want to compete with the likes of the Brighton and Huddersfield and spending what they're doing and progressing with the club.
That was very tactical, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We're not trying to compete with Liverpool and Man City to make us look like deluded.
Yeah.
Instead of saying what is actually happening, which is we're not competing with anyone in the league.
It's a great point, Cowley, because when he was playing for the club, we fucking were competing with Man City. In fact, Man City weren't our competitors. Man City were nobody when we were under Robson.
Sure, I scored in the new camp.
But we were competing with Liverpool. We were doing these things for someone who lived that and earned a very good living out of that. Then you'd think he, more than anybody else, would be able to appreciate that rather than it being fan delusion or some sort of, unrealistic ambition that every fan should have, the ambition for their club to aspire to be the best club it can possibly be and break into the top six. I mean, look at Everton this summer. Look at the likes of Fulham and Wolves. You know, I don't think they'll do very well, particularly Fulham and Wolves, but at least they're trying, at least they're giving it a go. I mean, surely saying Newcastle fans will be quietly confident.
No, quietly happy from the signings we've made this summer.
Quietly happy. Well, in football, it's not supposed to, I mean, it's bollocks anyway, but it's not supposed to be happy.
What's weird is he's seeing the same things that the other, like, useless media people have, all these pundits who have kind of had bad careers recently, saying the exact things. Oh, they've signed 7 players, like making a point of the numbers and like absolutely no analysis of what's actually happened, just saying the same things. They've spent this much, they've got this many players, he should be happy, all this, like, it's just the same crap that they're all saying. So it seems so scripted.
Back to the football, which is what we're like talking about. Cody, you touched on the goals that were gave away. Before we will get very positive again soon, because there was a lot of positives to take out of the game yesterday and moving forwards. Do you think that it's, you know, Rafa Benitez come out after the game and says we deserved at least a point, and I think we would all agree. But can you give away 2 such soft goals to such good teams and expect to get anything out of games in the Premier League?
You can't. If you look at, both goals. The first one we've touched on, we said before about what Shelvey doing, Mark and Sanchez. It's just like, think about it, lads. Like, he's good in the air, Sanchez. He's centre-back. Shelvey's...
We can't think about it if you want. No. So, it hasn't happened by accident, because he marked him throughout the first half and Sanchez got 3 headers off.
Yeah.
So, Hosselu, we've got 2 centre-backs and we've got Hosselu. And who needs picked up? They need... So, Alderweireld picked... No, is it him? No. Vertonghen.
Vertonghen needs
picked
up.
He needs picked... Dummett was picking him up.
Yeah.
Or not, as it turned out to be. But Dummett was picking him up. Presumably, the sales is Martin Harry Kane.
Yeah,
Kieran Clark. Who's Kieran Clark, Morgan? Any ideas? I don't know. This is surely it would make much more sense to have like pretty much Spurs' best attacking defender.
Just Sissoko in there was
that's a good point. Yeah, one was
big lad. But yeah, especially the first goal, Dummett's positionally not being where he should have been. And again, just ball watching, he's not realizing Vertonghen's gotten behind him, and Sanchez has got the jump, and then Vertonghen's got it in. Very lucky that I've gone across the line, but if it wasn't goal line technology, it would be 0-0, but never mind. But yeah, second goal as well. I think a lot of people are going to blame Yedlin. I didn't think Yedlin played that well yesterday. And again, positionally not great on that, but if you can see it, Richie is with Ali, and it's shouting it, obviously, Yedlin, that he's coming in the box. But I think Richie should follow Ali, because Richie's got no one else he's following. He just stays at the edge of the box. I think he should go back and track back, and then he probably... I mean, it's a great ball in, great delivery, but I just think...
It's also luck as well, isn't it? Like, Eriksen tries to play the ball, it comes off Dummett, and it literally couldn't fall to a player with no one around him to be able to put that ball on. We still should do much better.
Yeah.
But it's just like, we did not get, as you said earlier in our private conversation, the rub of the green yesterday, did it? And it was like... That ball, I mean, it's one thing you could say that we're unlucky because Vertonghen, he should smash the back of the net, but it's a really bad header, and he nearly puts it over the bar, and then it's just 9 millimeters over the line, dead unlucky. And then if you compare it to us hitting the post with Diome, it doesn't matter. I think you said it right, Norman. It doesn't matter whether Diome hits that straight out Lloris, who's a great keeper. He's hit it that hard. In fact, Norman, what did you say would happen if he'd hit it straight at him?
If Diome's shot had hit Lloris, I mean, it basically would have just snapped his hand straight off, wouldn't it? He would have had to go off. It would have been a double win, really. It would have been a goal and quite possibly the end of Lloris' season, which would have been awful. Don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating that would have been a positive thing, but just losing him for a match would have been good, because I thought Lloris was absolutely superb yesterday, just highlighting how good of a goalkeeper he really is. In fact, if I can just move into a comparison of goalkeeper performances, is that all right with you, lads? Dubravka, I thought, was good yesterday. He's an excellent goalkeeper, there's no two ways about it. The only thing that frustrated me, other than the fact that I don't think we really blame him for diving down and pushing a shot in the post, that was probably going wide. That's just something that keepers do. With that, if they've got like a moment of hesitancy, they'd rather just be, you know, better to be safe than sorry kind of attitude. What I think he maybe needs to curtail, and I'm sure it'll be picked up this week in training, is his distribution. He was always looking for the kind of quick rollout and kind of getting something started, which is really positive in many ways. But he was still kind of almost rolling the ball out to a fullback when there was really nothing on, and that put under a bit of an undue, unnecessary pressure. I don't know if that's how you lads interpret it.
I did notice it. Just in terms of his kicking as well, it didn't want to play long too many times, which at times it put us under pressure when it wasn't on, just get rid of it, really. But there was sometimes it just went out of touch. But his kick, I don't know, he just tried. I don't know if he's just seen it from other keepers in the league, other team, but I did see he try to play from the back a bit more than what I've seen end last season.
Yeah, I mean, there's times when you need to be a positive goalkeeper, and he's being very positive. You know, if you're at home against a team and it's let's say like a Burnley or a mid-table team where it's a close game and you want to try and catch something on the break, you need some quick movement, you need some quick reactions. But when you're under that kind of pressure from Spurs, and you've got Paul Dummett in a bit of space, don't be dinking the ball to him 30 yards under the touchline. He can't do anything with that, even if he can keep it in. A little bit too eager, I think, just from Dubravka to be seen as this, like, as you say, like a really good Premier League keeper, which he is. But I think Rafa will probably have a word with him and kind of say, look, there's times when you do that and there's times when you don't, and it'll be about, you know, getting the best out of him on that.
Stick up for him slightly, and I think you saw progression in yesterday's game. So I thought first half yesterday we weren't great.
I thought both teams were poor first half. It looked very much like a first game of the season.
You had Dummett losing his man for the goal, poor. You had Yedlin and Richie for that goal, poor. You had Diame and Shelby just like outrageously sloppy in possession. I mean, the pair of them, poor, like incredible. But then that all disappeared in the second half. So that was like it was a massive improvement. Even in one game, we saw a big improvement in those players and in the team. And then Diame and Shelby were back to their old selves in the second half, and Shelby with some brilliant balls. Diame some crucial interceptions. I mean, he pretty much stopped a goal coming in the box, nipping the ball off someone, and made some great tackles. So you saw everyone get better and better and better, apart from Christian Atsu, who came on and got worse, if that was possible. More on that later. But overall, it's kind of like, you know what, pre-season has been a mess for whatever reason. We didn't play well in any of the games, apart from maybe St. Pat's, but that was, you know, St. Pat's, no disrespect to them. And it's maybe like we're going to take a couple of weeks, like we have done, by the way, in the last two seasons, to get up to speed. And maybe that's just part of, we start slowly, we get better, and we finish very strongly under the kind of, once the new players are integrated. So there's definitely reasons to be positive in terms of, I think what we saw yesterday, like if you look at some teams, I know it's the very early days, but you probably saw what saw so far, what some teams are capable of. Maybe that was Palace's best, I don't know. Withdrawing, you know, Palace at Fulham have withheld a lot of pressure, and then got a couple of goals in the counter-attack and then dominated after that. Whereas I think maybe that's them. I think us, with the signings we've got to come in, and the fact that players generally get better under Benitez, as you're going to see, much better than we saw yesterday in the second half. And that's encouraging, because we deserve to take something from that game, and on the balance of play and the balance of chances, in my opinion, we deserve to win the game, which is easier said than done, and you don't know how Spurs will react. But I thought we're average in the first half, but we're very, very good second half, and there's a lot of room for improvement from us, and probably from Spurs as well. But ultimately, and people talk about, you know, Spurs' players and coming back late. End of the day, none of our players get in the Spurs team. Not one player, probably in the squad. I know they had a young lad on the bench, but probably in the squad, not one Newcastle player gets anywhere when near Spurs is 16 or 17.
Kennedy, maybe.
Yeah, good point, Kennedy. But, so the fact that if you look at us since under Rafa, it's a really good kind of arc, this, for me. You've got Spurs last season at home when we play with, and Lascelles referenced this after the game, you play with 11 men behind the ball. You put 11 men behind the ball and you try and do something. Ultimately, we didn't really have a chance against them. We're doing well until the red card. Then you've got Spurs away, when we're the better team. I argue the Spurs score a good goal and have some chances. We probably should do better. But, you know, we're definitely worthy of a point. Yep. And then you've got it again at home where we're probably, if there's one team who's going to win that game, it's got to be us on the balance of playing the chances created. So against, I mean, bear in mind Spurs, because it's Spurs, have like the same team every time you play them. You know, and whilst they did create some chances in the second half, I mean, Dubravka's save is a brilliant save. It's just Sissoko, because it's not just like it hits him first view and you think that's just hit him. He's actually stuck an arm out.
Right down, yeah.
And it's a world-class save. There aren't many goalkeepers, I think, who can make that point-blank save. Obviously, one of them is at the other end. Lloris, who makes a similar save against Perez. I mean, that ball from Perez, that shot goes through the Spurs' player leg. So Lloris sees it at the absolute last minute. So that was a brilliant save. But yeah, for me, Newcastle under Rafa will continue to improve, and we're going to need that because other teams are going to get better as the season goes on. But for me, an overall a really positive day and a positive performance, and something we're going to take moving forwards.
Yeah, just quickly on that, I think what we saw from the kickoff, at no point was I thinking we don't have a game plan here. Everything looked like it was rehearsed. Everyone looked like they knew what they're doing. Yes, there was some sloppiness, some rustiness. It was one of the situations where it was so obvious that if we'd had the new lads in earlier and they'd been kind of shown how to play and what the kind of the tactics was. He's had to start with Hosslu because he spent all pre-season drilling Hosslu and probably preparing him for the Tottenham game.
Can I just jump in? And I know we've been critical of set pieces, but people, you know, that before, I mean, Twitter before matches is like a heinous place, more so than usual. Yeah. Criticism of Hosslu, criticism of team selection. You know, just wait until the game plays out, but I'm sure we're not talking to these kind of people.
Yeah, he did what he was expected of him and he got the goal the first half.
People were saying, would you rather take a half-fit Rondon over a fully fit Hosslu? I know what I would take and saying I'd rather see Rondon. But it's about set pieces, defensive set pieces, as Rondon had time to work on that. It's about where to standard goal kicks. It's about where to fit into a tactical plan rather than just hire a player in. And this is why Rafa Benitez is different to like a Graham Souness who hired Lugé and Owen and all those kind of players like the day after the sign type thing. Yeah. You're not going to see Rafa Benitez throw a player into the team who doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing through no fault of the player. So it's just much more complex than, oh, well, I'd rather take Rondon over Hosslu. Well, I'm sure Rafa Benitez would as well, you know, being, you know, presumptuous for a second, but I'm sure that Rondon is going to be, unless Hosslu keeps scoring scores, of course, which I think we're happy to do. I mean, Norman, on this one, how do you think the new lads who came on did yesterday? I know you were very positive in your match report.
How do I think the new lads got on? I was really pleased with Rondon's contribution. Don't get me wrong, I thought Hosslu had an excellent game yesterday. I mean, not only the fantastic header from a brilliant cross, but also the pass for the Diarmia chance. Kennedy chance, sorry. Yeah, it was an outrageous pass. Just really good vision, really intelligent. But I think, you know, we've been saying, Si, you and I, that it'd be good to get Rondon with about half an hour to go, and that's exactly what he did, and he affected the game almost immediately. The corner that I think Hosslu would won, Rondon kind of caused chaos in their box straight away, and we almost scored straight from it. I think that was what the Perez chance came from, wasn't it? Lloris pulled off that outrageous save. Yeah. And he just looks a handful, and I think obviously he had that chance as well that was going in the bottom corner and before it deflected off the bottom of Vertonghen's leg. And he looks like a player who will score goals regardless of how his goal scoring record's been the last couple of seasons. He's been playing in teams that aren't set up to create much, and he's been doing a lot of it on his own. I think with someone like Perez or Muto behind him doing a lot of the running that he was having to do at West Brom, as well as try and get on the end of the chances he was probably trying to create himself, I think he will get goals. And I think he's due to his physicality, he's just going out there. There aren't any centre-halves that I particularly worry about him going up against. Muto, on very briefly, but he showed flashes of being a very intelligent player. Some really, really good footwork, good close control. And I think it's quite obvious as well, even from the brief cameo we made yesterday, that Muto is probably capable of playing a number 10 role behind Rondon. Really good to see them on the pitch. You know, based on what we've seen so far, they look like very positive additions. I'm just looking forward to seeing them again.
Yeah, just quickly on Muto. It's going to be a player where, as the season goes on, we're going to learn about him, because realistically, none of us really know what to expect from him. I can't say he stood out at the World Cup. Obviously, he's an international footballer, which is a good sign, but what I noticed yesterday when he came on for was about 10 minutes, was he?
Yeah.
He's really fast. he was making loads of runs down the channels, and you know, it's a nice surprise because I didn't know he was fast. So that was really encouraging. And yeah, he's just straight in trying to make something happen. Like, there's no doubt about what his job was. Like, it's 10 minutes to go, get in the channels, get yourself down there, and see if we can create something, see if we can create a goal. And
his movement was great, like you say, making the right runs as well, intelligent runs, not just running for the sake of it doing it. But he was comfortable just going in straight away. When you get 10 minutes, it's hard to come in the game when you've only got 10 minutes to make an impression. But he looked sharp, good with both feet, so it'd be good to see what he's going to be like the rest of the season. In terms of Rondon as well, I've been speaking to a good mate who's a season ticket holder for West Brom. He said he thinks he'll be a good signing for you. I mean, the stats are not great, but he's happened to play under two shite managers. But he says his holder play will be good. He's a handful, good in the air. He says the only thing what'll let him down is just his finishing. He did miss quite a few one-on-ones of them, which hopefully that we need someone more clinical. And like, because he thinks in terms of Gale sign, he's like, he's happy to have him, but he said, we won't create the chances that you do. But saying that, West Brom scored 4 goals yesterday, so you might have that one wrong. But yeah, exactly. So he said he thinks he'll be a good, obviously, under Rafa. But like I say, yesterday he came on and he was a handful straight away, as he said, from the Perez chance. I think he's obviously going to be more mobile. I think he wouldn't be as sharp as, obviously, like I say, his first game back for 30 minutes coming on. But yeah, like I say, I think he'll be a good addition.
Good, promising stuff. And I totally agree with everything Norman said as well. Si, every week we like to get listener participation. You know, do you want to pick up some of the comments we asked you, the listeners, on our Twitter feed at TF Weekly Pod? Kind of what the thought of the game yesterday, anything that's caught your eye in terms of what people have been saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think the general consensus is the same, that we're very unlucky and deserved something. Burnsy, whose Twitter handle is at Ben Arthur Chance.
Ben Arthur, by any chance.
unlucky to hit the person bar, unlucky not to get a draw or a win, unlucky to lose Yedlin in the 92nd minute, which we need to talk about because that could be important. Will Harbin got in touch just to say Kennedy is a star. I think me and Norman after the game on the match day were just saying Kennedy's just fucking brilliant, isn't he? He's by far our best player. Also pleased with Muto and says he would rate Muto to start over Perez. Interesting.
Controversial, that one, because it would be harsh. A game like it was yesterday where we didn't have much of the ball, I wouldn't be... And then Perez did have that one really good chance, which, he's very good from those tight angles. But you've certainly got to keep Perez in for Cardiff for me, because you want to give him that chance in the team to...
There's no chance he's going to drop Perez next week. Yeah. No, after no chance.
Pleased with Alassor and Muto and like to see him get involved, but starting games might be a bit much for him at this stage. Yeah. We don't really know what he can do, and he's probably not ready for the Premier League in terms of his physicality.
Yeah. He has come on and played against a tired, like, Tottenham. So obviously he's going to be... So from the start, we're not going to see him just yet. He's going to keep Perez in a bit longer.
Nathan Reeve, the same. Disappointing, because it feels like we could have got something. But he then goes on to say, this might be a bit harsh, but Atsu, nowhere near this level. I think we're all quite critical of Atsu. I mean, he's had some really good games in the Premier League for us, but he's not that consistent. And yeah, yesterday was not one of his better days. He just seemed to make the game worse. And, you know, we were angling for Richie started to fall out of the game, and he was maybe, I don't know, from his reaction, he wasn't ready to come off, but we'll come on to that as well.
Well, let's come on to it now and go back to them. First of all, let's talk about the substitution. And I've seen so much written and talked about this substitution. Was it a good substitution? Nah. You know, ultimately, I'd imagine he wanted to inject some more pace, maybe to push Spurs back. Atsu has done good things in Newcastle shirt. Has he achieved what Matt Ritchie has? No. But I'm going to, you know, trust Rafa Benitez in his substitutions. Did it work? No. Was it like more relevant to us losing the game than Dummett losing his man, or Richie Yedlin losing Dwight Alley? What's he called?
Delhi.
That's it, yeah.
Dwight Alley. You've got Dwight on the brain.
That would be beautiful, that combination, those two players. But so in terms of just like how much conversation there's been about it, it's like, yes, probably if it was me, which it never will be because I'm not a football manager, never will be, or anyone else commentating on these things, would we have done the sub? No. Is it really a massive deal in the grander scheme of things? I mean, we managed to hit the bar and have a few chances after Richie went off. So I don't know what you lads think. I think it's been made into this big thing when ultimately every single manager gets subs wrong. I mean, you know, Jurgen Klopp's brought on Daniel Sturridge today and he scored a goal with his first touch because he was in the right place at the right time. It's like, as long as the thought process is right, you can't control what's going to happen. And if you're Rafa Benitez and the amount of good substitutions he's made in time in Newcastle managing as a career, I'm going to give him one.
It's one of those things. The talking points of any football match often are the substitute. And for years, we've had managers who constantly made mistakes and would criticize so many of the substitutions and say they were wrong because it almost always got worse or went badly. And it was a lot of kind of fodder for talking about that. But with Rafa, you can hardly ever question what he's done. So when there is something that looks like an obvious mistake, it's a real talking point because everyone's sort of saying, oh, he's got that wrong, because we're not used to ever saying that about Rafa, because 9 times out of 10, he makes the right decisions, and 99 times out of 100, probably more. So yeah, I think it's just become a talking point because of the nature of the substitution. We were getting ourselves back in the game, and that was the only part of it that didn't quite work. And yeah,
we're talking about it because of Richie's reaction, really, and how awfully bad. It's easy for us to say in hindsight it was a bad substitution. Atsu was terrible when he came on. Let's say lost possession of the ball quite a bit, didn't look interested, didn't do anything really, to be honest. So we're doing it because Richie's reaction, didn't obviously want to come at that point. Yeah. But the second half, it obviously didn't do as well as what he did in the first. And that's obviously Rafa's thinking, right, more pace is going to bring obviously Mutu on in a bit, and now bring Atsu on now. So Atsu has done okay something when he came off the bench and made an impact, so it's easy for us to say now.
I think what you said, Dog, is absolutely right. He was trying to get some pace in the pitch because Tottenham were tired, they were slow, and we were full of energy, and we just needed to get forward quickly. And that's, for all his positives, Matt Ritchie hasn't got that in his locker. He'll always pick up the ball on the halfway line, and it's quite difficult for him to get to the byline. And Atsu with a good touch here and there can get there, and he's quick and all his end product. But I mean, it failed spectacularly. But I think at that stage, we were saying the same thing. We need a bit more energy, a bit more bodies getting forward, and it just, yeah. I can see why he's done it.
At that point, it did go a bit flat about for 10 minutes. Yeah. Just nothing was really happening at that point. But I mean, obviously Richie thought he could do something as well. He probably still got energy to do something. But
this is why Rafa's been angling for Townsend for about 3 transfer windows now. Like, he would be an improvement on Richie. Well, I love Mike Richie, but we wanted to build this, make the team better. We need another option on the right, and we haven't really got it. I mean, we've got Murphy and Atsu in and around the team, but neither are any better than Matt Ritchie, and that's a position that we could improve with someone like Townsend or whatever else.
Okay, Norman, I'm going to come to you because the Yedlin injury looks bad. We haven't heard anything from the club. It's not ideal. In fact, it's far from ideal. You know, there's been a lot of negativity on social media about his potential replacement in Mankio. Your thoughts on how the team will do with Yedlin out of the side for what looks like a prolonged period. I hope I'm wrong.
Yedlin's a huge loss. I mean, I think, you know, we all know that defensively he's not as good as what we'd like him to be. But he offers so much just because he's so quick. And he can get up and down the flank like with incredible pace, and it brings so much to the side. And he's a huge loss. And even yesterday, like the fact that he tried to keep a really difficult ball in shows his determination levels. And it was just a real shame he got injured the way he did. But to a certain extent, kudos to him for attempting to keep someone going in the first place. His replacement's more than likely going to be Mankio, and obviously Mankio. I mean, I see he gets a lot of stick again in social media, so you just don't know what kind of gauge that really is for the general perception around it. But he does appear to kind of be on the receiving end of some criticisms. And you know what? He's not going to offer anywhere near as much as Yedlin going forward. But I don't think defensively he's a particularly bad player. I'm yet to see any kind of watch him in any match where he's really been utterly atrocious. Undoubtedly, he's made mistakes, you know, he hasn't covered the right space, or he's lost his man, and he's shown too much on the inside. But he has played quite a lot of his football at Newcastle as a left back as well, whereas he is a right back, a right footed right back. And I'm not overly concerned about him defensively. I just think we'll miss a little bit more going forward. But then again, this season I think we've got better attacking options in any way. So I'm hoping that the Yedlin loss this season won't be as impactful as it would have been last season had it happened. I just hope that, you know, Mankio's first game, let's say especially against Chelsea at home, if he does something that isn't to everyone's liking, that there isn't a kind of collective groan, because I think he's one of those players that maybe we need to just be a little bit patient with him. Because if there is a mistake in him early on and people get on his back, then that's not going to help him. And I don't think he's as bad as what people make out. I think perhaps the fact that he spent a full season in a shocking Sunderland side that got relegated probably set him up a little bit from when he arrived at Newcastle. A lot of people, we already just thought, well, he can't be that good, can he? But may Mike, any theory on it is that if he joined us in the championship and he'd been competition for Yedlin, he would have been a better bet than Anita, so he would have had that kind of season to bet in. I'm not overly concerned about him coming into the side. I think he'll be okay. I think he's an alright replacement for Yedlin. Is he ideal? No, but he's what we've got, and he's not as bad as what people make him.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Defensively, I wouldn't worry about Mankio filling that role, especially with Matt Ritchie in front of him, who provides a lot of defensive cover as well. I think what it does do is leave us quite imbalanced as an attacking side. We've got Kennedy and also Atsu, who I think showed yesterday that he'd probably rather play on the left. Really good. Obviously, we're going to create a lot down the left-hand side. Now that Richie's probably going to have a bit more defensive kind of work to do, he's going to find himself even deeper, and we're just going to struggle to get ourselves out on that side, and that worries me, because the one thing Rafa tries to do with his team is have balance between defence on each side, and that's going to kill her, because Yedlin's pace, as you've said, gives us, he'll take a man going forward and he can recover going back, and now Richie and Mankio, whilst defensive, they can probably handle whatever the Premier League throws at them. I can't see us getting much joy now creating chances from that side.
Good. I think we're just about at the end of this podcast. We've talked through it all, and again, you know, I think we'll have to give Hosselu credit. Great header. I mean, the movement as well, it wasn't just a kind of right place, right time. He takes a little step inside of the defender, so the defender thinks he's potentially going to make a near post run, and then he peels off him. So that's really good centre forward play, and possibly even someone like me didn't think, you know, he potentially had that in him. But if we can get balls in like that from Richie and Kennedy, he might get a few goals this season.
Because from where we were looking, it's like, is he not offside? Because he got so much space. Exactly. Obviously, he's run.
The movement was so good, yeah. So that was positive. There were plenty of other positives. You know, Stephen Ord on social media said, if we'd had the players in the start of pre-season like Rafa wanted, we probably could have won the game. And I think he's spot on. And I think the profligacy of the regime has already cost the team points in the Premier League. You know, Sam GC is a little bit different. He says, didn't really learn anything, good effort, but if you don't pay for goal scorers, you don't score goals you should. Post bar, keep the same story as last season. I think that's not a bad point. Rondon's really unlucky, because that shot he takes is going in the bottom corner. Lloris isn't going to bother diving, I think. He's just going to do that kind of watch it in. And the lad who gets the block in, it hits the bottom of his leg, arse type area, and it bounces into the ground and goes up. So it was like, if it had just been a, you know, that 9 millimeters that Spurt had, if Rondon shot it a tiny bit lower, but obviously trying to get power, hence why it leaves the ground, that's 2-2. And again, you never know who can win the game, etc. And then HFR say Kennedy has Bostic on his boots. I'm not quite sure what that is that like glue? I don't know. Nah, you'll have to let one know about that one.
Is that like a flubber thing? Like, does it make a mint? I don't know.
Someone let me know what it is.
What was it?
But he really should have done better on that chance. And it was a great pass by Hosselu. But, you know, he'll get better. Lads, we'll leave it there. We've done about 45 minutes here. So thanks for listening to the True Faith podcast. Like we said, keep this podcast free by subscribing to Patreon. You get 6 extra shows a week. Obviously, you might not have time, or you don't have to listen to them all. This week coming up, the schedule's looking like you've got Norman, who's with us now, does a Premier League roundup with his pal John and Michael Crean. You've then got the review show, which looks back at the weekend's game in even more detail than this, and a little bit of Premier League stuff as well. You've got you'll have the match preview every week, so you'll have a Cardiff match preview. Also coming up this week is Newcastle United All-Time 11 podcast that we do quite regularly, get different panelists on to talk about the best players they've ever seen and the worst for Newcastle United in the modern era. You've got True Faith Any Questions next Friday, where we get about 30 or 40 questions in every week from listeners, from patrons, and we'll answer them about literally anything to do with Newcastle United or life. Saturday, you've got the Cardiff match day. You know, Norman and Rob from the podcast will be in Cardiff, podcasting live from there, and all of that's for patrons. So I'll stop banging on about that. Thanks to you lads for your time today, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back to you on the free show next Sunday, hopefully after a good win at Cardiff.